In an age of national political dysfunction, a book released this week argues that leaders at the local level have become the country's problem solvers. Bruce Katz of the Brookings Institution co-wrote The New Localism, which examines how cities and their surrounding communities are tackling issues ranging from economic and social inequities to environmental sustainability. 90.5 WESA's Anli Herring spoke with Katz about where Pittsburgh fits in this model.
In The New Localism, you highlight Pittsburgh as an example of this trend. Why is that?
We think Pittsburgh is a new norm of growth. Pittsburgh was hit with the industrial shock in the late 1970s, the collapse of the steel industry, tens of thousands of jobs disappearing overnight. But the city has diversified its economy and, starting in the late 1970s, began to invest in the future. And what we think is so special about Pittsburgh is a network of business, philanthropic, university, and public leaders came together over the course of decades, literally, and really funded the future, imagined the future. And we think that is a replicable model. It would look different in different parts of the U.S. or different parts of the world, but the notion of co-governing is really universal.
There are concerns in Pittsburgh about the concessions that local leaders might be willing to make to attract companies, for example, Uber and Amazon. They could use things like tax breaks or lighten regulations. In your model, is there a risk that for-profit companies and unelected individuals could wield too much influence over a city's future?
Well, I think it's a global competition. And if there are certain companies, domestic or multinational, that are looking for these kinds of tax abatements. But I think the high road economy, which Pittsburgh has practiced for quite some time, basically says, if we build the talent, if we build the centers of excellence and fund them at scale over a sustained period of time, if we show that we can commercialize research and invent next generation technologies, the companies will come because they have to come. And I think that's really the more dominant reason why Pittsburgh, I think, has emerged as really the most interesting post-industrial city of sorts. It still makes things, it just makes different things. Because if you're a global company, you can't ignore Pittsburgh in certain segments of the market.
It sounds like you're saying this is almost kind of flipped to what we consider to be the typical relationship between large for-profit companies or even any, I guess, private sector actor and a city government that's competing for its business or to have them locate here. What do government leaders in particular and even just citizens living in a city or a particular area need to keep in mind to mitigate any risks that could be associated with that?
Well, I think first you have to have a narrative across these different sectors that really paint a picture of your competitive assets and advantages. You need to tell the story of Pittsburgh and what you are distinctly good at and why you're good at that. Secondly, I think the public sector needs to be co-partners, co-investors in the kinds of things that really matter to corporations. Quality schools, safe streets, an effective transportation system. And these are things that the private sector is not going to supply. But it'll make a difference if they're supplied well with high quality and over time. And the last piece is, I think the public sector, and I think this is very true about Pittsburgh, this is why we write about you so much, the distance between the mayor, the city council, the county executive, the Heinz Endowments, the Hillman Foundation, R.K. Mellon, Carnegie Mellon, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, Allegheny Conference. I mean, this is a collaborative culture in Pittsburgh. That sends a signal to corporations who in the end like stability and they like predictability, that instead of taking the short-term tax abatement, what they want to be in is in a community that is investing for the long haul. And I, so you know, on message, on critical investments, and on collaboration, the public sector can send a very strong signal to private sector business.
Something we continue to struggle with is ensuring that these collaborations and the development and growth that that spurs is inclusive, especially for individuals or populations that often are marginalized in these discussions. Do you have any recommendations on shielding against that?
You know, that is to some extent about schools and skills, and making sure each individual is able to realize their full potential. It's also about using the value that's created as cities recover and renew themselves to reinvest in neighborhoods and reinvest in workforce housing and reinvest in smart infrastructure. And that's not just an aspiration. There are institutions and structures that are mostly used in Northern Europe or in portions of Asia that now need to come into the United States. A large portion of this book is about how the U.S. needs to repurpose institutions so that we can leverage public wealth, public assets, to reinvest in our community. So there is the potential to grow an inclusive economy, but it will require us at the local level, city and county, to do things differently. To a large extent, we can't count on the federal government anymore, or even states, to do a lot of the heavy lifting. We're going to have to grow our economies and grow value and unlock public capital and organize private and civic wealth to do what's necessary for our citizenry.
How long do you think communities would have to wait to see the benefits, to really feel those benefits? How many years are we talking?
Well, some of these benefits can be realized quite soon because the easy stuff, to some extent, is financing the building of projects, whether it's housing projects, whether it's infrastructure projects. So some of that can be, you know, can be visible literally within electoral cycles. The hard issue, and I think everyone who's listening to this knows, is the development cycles of a child and a young adult. We're going to have to basically think about investments starting at the earliest ages and on through community college and lifelong learning, because the economy is changing so fast that the skills that, you know, a child sort of acquires early on in their life will be obsolete within a relatively short period of time. So creating this cradle-to-career system is something which will take a longer time to do, but ultimately will have the largest payoff because, you know, a lot of times what cities focus on is their physical stock and their physical capital. The roads, the transit, the buildings, et cetera, the waterfront. What we need to be focusing on is our human capital and how to grow that. And so I think some of the interventions can be almost immediate in terms of their impact, but this cradle-to-career notion is first it has to be embraced, and then it has to basically be sustained and followed over time.
Could the new localism model potentially reflect an increased fracturing of American society? A major premise of the model seems to be the dysfunction in national politics and the fact that it has created a vacuum that local governments are increasingly starting to fill. So I'm wondering, do you worry that people are simply retreating to their own bubbles as it becomes harder to work across boundaries?
Well, I think our national parties are mostly focusing on exploiting grievances and differences. So the notion that the country is going to unify because of the National Democratic or Republican Party is essentially delusional. The real geography in the United States is not city or suburb or county, but metropolitan. That's the integrated nature of our economy, and we have 388 metropolitan areas in the United States. What's interesting to Jeremy and myself about the future of the country is a majority of people who live in rural areas actually live within metropolitan areas because sprawl and decentralization of population has gone on for so much time. So if we can show the connection and linkages between the core city, you know, city of Pittsburgh, Allegheny County, the neighboring counties and beyond, and really work together to build a prosperous and inclusive economy, I think that's going to do more to bring people together across the political divide than anything the national parties would do. The future of this country is going to be determined metropolitan area by metropolitan area. And our ability to get back to some sane and sensible strategy for investing and growth is going to be built from the bottom up.
Is it something that can work anywhere, or is it meant for more progressive cities that are trying to be more innovative and on the cutting edge?
I think it can work anywhere. I've gone to a whole bunch of conservative cities and red states, and I frankly find them innovating in very interesting ways, sometimes similar to what's going on in progressive cities, sometimes very different. You know, what really matters for cities is to understand what makes them special and distinctive. You know, what are your competitive assets? What are your competitive advantages? What's your offer to companies or to people? And I think that basically moves beyond party or ideology. It's really about place and community. And there's one thing about the United States which makes us, I think, very special in the world, is people feel very committed to their place. It may be the sports team, it may be because their grandparents moved, it may be for any number of things. But there is a commitment to place in the United States that trumps, so to speak, party and ideology.